Blog Talk Radio.
Everyone, it is Sunday night, and it is time for the weekend wrap. Had a lot of great action over the weekend, both Friday and Saturday. Scully, are you there? Hello, Scully. Well, I know Scully was on his way back from New York from the fight last night. And we were hoping to be able to get him in. But I do see my colleague and host, Mr. Jabron Clement. Jabron, how are we doing this evening, my man?
Doing good, JK.
Man, yeah, it's been a little while. As always, glad to have you here on a Sunday night. We had a lot of good action over the weekend. What did you think about the it was right there in your area, right there in Brooklyn, the Barclays Center. What did you think about the crowd? Did you think that it grabbed the attendance that we all thought it would?
Actually, it was a little more than what I expected. I didn't expect it to really be a crowd like that. Looking at some of the past fights this year that's been there, besides like the mega fights, all the other fights wasn't like sold out or like real packed. But it was live. The atmosphere was real live. From the last press conference to the weigh-in leading up to the fight, you know, even with the undercards and some of the cards that wasn't televised, the weigh-ins was very intense. So the atmosphere for the whole fight week was pretty revved up.
Yeah, but Brooklyn usually gets some very good fight cards, and I think we were kind of expecting that part, but we saw some of
your
the young
recording
prospect,
has reached the maximum length. To replay your message, press 1. To delete it.
I think that must have been Scully. I was trying to get Scully coming through the mountains, but we do have the champ on. Champ, how are we doing tonight?
Hey, what's going on, everybody? I'm doing good. Thanks for asking.
Hey, so a lot of some great action this weekend, including the heavyweight. We had some other bouts on there. I don't know. Lehman, did you get a chance to watch most of the action out of Barclay yesterday?
Yes, I did. Now, I'm trying to recall the fighters that fought two fights on Showtime before that. I can't even recall who that was at this moment.
One was the young prospect Vila, and the other was the Sean Porter fight.
Right.
The Vila fight ended in the first round. He has aspirations, I believe, at the 140-pound division. Jabron, what did you think about the first fight, even though it lasted, you know, less than a round? Do you think that Mr. Beeler served notice? Or, you know, I mean, that 140-pound division is pretty packed now.
I didn't. Which particular fight you talking about?
The very first one, where the kid got knocked out in the first round, just before the Sean Porter fight.
Oh, I missed that one. I was moving around. I missed that fight. But I saw the Lipinets fight. I saw the Porter fight. I saw the Deontay Wilder fight.
Well, you know, we've had Mr. Lips on the show before, and what did you think about his showing?
It was a good performance. You know, I've been hearing waves about him possibly having a fight with the likes of Mikey Garcia, and I think it would be a good fight, but I don't think he would come out victorious in that fight against Mikey. It'll be a good entertaining fight, but me personally, I think Mikey is a little more skilled than Lipinets, but you know, he's a gutsy fighter.
You know, once again, you know, we see, you know, these European fighters coming in, being able to get some of the bigger fights. I mean, they all put on a great performance. I think before we talk about the heavyweight fight, Raymond, I wanted to kind of ask you about Mr. Ortiz. There was something, you know, they were talking about how he failed the drug test, and then they were talking about something called, it's an exemption called the TUE. Layman, are you familiar with that?
No, what does that mean? What does it stand for?
Wait a minute, I'll tell you in 1 minute. Because it was something that I wasn't familiar with. It's called a TUE, and what it means is, hold on. It's a therapeutic use exemption.
It's a what?
A therapeutic use exemption.
Really?
In other words, even though he used this substance, the banned substance, whatever it was, if he had filed, he said he was taking it for his high blood pressure. If he had put this drug down as part of his therapeutic use exemption, he would have still been able to fight. Are you familiar with that clause at all?
Man, this is the first time I've heard it. Wow, it's you caught me off guard with this one.
Jabron, are you familiar with this? I mean, you know, I know you've done some research into the different things that the drug use and the forms and whatnot. Are you familiar with what this is, Jabron?
Well, I'm not familiar of the term monology, but I understand. I was knowledgeable of the meeting that Ortiz did have here in New York City on Wednesday with the sanctioning bodies and the commission. So to make a long story short, basically Ortiz's team cut a fat check. That's basically what they did. They excuse me. They cut a check, to be quote unquote penalized, and that's just part of the slap on the wrist. So the terminology that you use, JK, that's a political, basically the political correct way of saying they cut the check.
Okay. All right. Because I'm like, you know, a new invention. What the hell is, you know, I'm like, okay, all right. Layman, when you fill out these different forms and whatnot, I'm looking at the penalties here, and it says that in order for his suspension to be lifted fully in a Vega Clean boxing program at his own expense. Layman, how expensive are these tests? And have they effectively shut down Ortiz for the next, 12 to 18 months?
You know, man, I have to be honest with you, JK. I really don't know about the current cost of those tests because when I was fighting, man, it wasn't as random. But, you know, I don't know. I'm sure this is probably mandated by the sanctioning bodies for these guys. But, I would, like I say, man, when I was fighting, this wasn't something that we had to deal with as much as you do today. I'm glad they do it, actually.
Yeah, I mean, when it seems like, you know, all of the opponents seem to be dirty. I'm really glad to see that Deontay is part of this program. But did you happen to see the Sean Porter fight, champ?
I did. I saw bits and pieces of it. But you know, I can't give you like a clear decisiveness on who I thought won the fight.
Okay. Let's put it this way. What did you think of Sean's performance? Were you surprised that this fight went the distance?
Yeah. I was actually surprised that it went the distance. You know, Sean reminds me so much of Shane Mosley. Like they remind me so much of each other. And I just, you know, looking at the two, man, it seemed like their career is going like the same way. Like his career is going the same way as a Shane Mosley. I was just wondering what's his skill going to be what it used to be? Because I always tell you guys, whenever a man has a war, you know, it always takes a little bit out of him. And so, you know, he did better than I thought he was going to do. I'm going to say that. What's your thoughts?
I thought he looked a little fatigued. I guess if that's what you want to call it, I didn't think his punches were as crisp as they usually are. I'm used to the raw, which he brought, but I thought maybe, you know, as you said, looking back on the Thurman fight, you know, maybe he was looking forward to Thurman. And possibly, you know, that might have affected his performance. But I thought that the old Sean would have probably gotten out probably somewhere between the sixth and the eighth round. Like you said, not to say that it wasn't, you know, it wasn't a good Sean performance because that's what he does. He's a bully, but I was kind of surprised to see this kid stay with him as long as he did. Now, the kid is not a bum, so it's nothing like that. And I also thought that, you know, the scores might have been a little raggedy. Yeah, I mean, you know, I might have given Grados another round or two, but all in all, considering the layoff and what was at stake, I thought that Sean possibly should have put on a better performance, or maybe the kid was just one of those guys. Because I think he took some of the best that Sean had to offer. I was definitely looking for a little bit more from Sean, and I'm hoping that was just a precursor, let's say, to the Thurman fight, and not showing that his skills have eroded that much. What do you think, Jabron?
I think it's a mixture of his how he put his work together. Like, he smothered a lot of his work. You know, don't get me wrong, he's a great guy, great fighter, but he tend to smother his work, and I don't really see him set anything up. He just kill you with pressure and just throw punches. Like, he don't set really any traps, you know, and I don't know, man. Like, if you watch people like the Charlos or like Laura, you know, like, they set things up. It's like Rigondeaux. They set things up. Whereas Sean, like, he's a strong guy, but he smothered his work so much that he really doesn't possess his full potential of his power. Because it's one thing when you're in front of somebody and they just overwhelming you. After a while, like, you get immune to it because there's no change of pace. It's no soft touch. Everything is one speed. But when you running into punches that you don't see coming and your momentum coming forward, that punch is going to hurt worse than a punch that you see coming. And you might not even put that much pop on it, but just the trajectory of the punch of your momentum coming forward and you not seeing the punch, you know. So that's one thing I take away from Sean Porter game and from the fight. And Granados is a game fighter. He's never been stopped in his career, and he's only been dropped a couple of times and always got back up in those fights and won those particular fights that he's been dropped in. So, you know, it was a little bit of both, skill and his opponent.
Lehman, Sean said that he thought he broke his hand after the sixth round. Not being a fighter, but, you know, just knowing, you know, the pain of having a broken hand, usually, you know, that's, you know, when you hit something with a broken hand, that usually, you know, kind of resounds up that whole arm, you know, but this is just a layman, you know, somebody makes a living, I'm sure it's even worse. Layman, we've heard, you know, even back in your generation, you know, fighters' hands, one of the things about Floyd was his hands. It seems like instead of there being more advances to protecting a fighter's hands, it seems like, you know, this is something that's becoming more frequent. Layman, is there something special about, you know, wraps, or all, you know, wraps all the same? I mean, you know, is there something that we can do more to protect fighters' hands?
You know what, man? That's a real hard one to answer, because trust and believe, man, these are the seconds, the people that wrap hands. You know, man, these guys are masters, and they can literally make a cast on your wrist. I mean, I can't speak for all, you know, people who wrap hands, but, man, the guys that have wrapped my hands throughout the years, man, I mean, my wrists were the last things I was ever worried about. But I was fortunate But in answering your question, I personally don't see any more that they could do to try to help a guy risk, I mean, without putting a cast on it, because that would really be the only thing, because you got to think when a person throws a punch, if you don't tighten up at the right time, or if you hit your target, you know, before you can tighten up, I mean, that's just human error, you know what I mean? So with that being said, I don't think there's any way to fix that, you know, like I said, unless you're going to put cast on the wrist. But, you know, that's the only thing I could see them doing at this point. What do you think, Jabron?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. Well, I mean, with some fighters, it's about how they throw a punch. And then it all depends on where your punch lands, because Granado's got a big head and a hard head. And that left hand was landing. Like, that was the only thing that was really going for Sean, was that left. He was vulnerable to that left hand, and Sean was putting everything on it, but Granados was taking it. He was walking through it. But that's why I go back to changing the speed on your punches and trajectory. Like, you know, after a while, Granados got a meal, and he was walking through those shots where he was taunting Porter. You know what I'm saying? So that's just my thoughts on that.
Now, Porter has also said that he won't take another fight until he's fighting Keith Thurman. Raymond, is that a dangerous stance to take? I mean, you know, and by that, what I mean, as far as the monetary on the business side, we've already seen how Sean looks when he's had these long layoffs. If he, you know, doesn't fight Thurman until, say, this time next year, would that, I mean, you know, what effect would that have on him, as a matter of fact, on their rematch? Do you think it would have any financial repercussions, champ?
You're saying on their rematch, because it's a whole year out, you know, you're asking, would the layoff of Sean Porter, would that hurt the sales?
Yeah, would that hurt the sales of the rematch in the sense of, you know, once again, we're not seeing Sean in the ring. He's not really doing anything to boost his fan base. Whereas, you know, Thurman is either at the fights or always in the spotlight. And more than likely, he's going to fight earlier part next year rather than the latter. So, that's figuring that Thurman will probably give a fight, sometime in April or maybe late March. But in the meantime, Sean would just be coming off of a rehab, right?
Yes, actually, yes.
Well, actually, it'll work in his favor because he coming back from an injury. Sean is coming back from an injury, so Thurman will be getting his soft touch fight around March, and they'll probably fight probably around August.
Okay. All right. Which would mean that it was, like you said, it could possibly end up being a good timing. But I'm just thinking, you know, with the base that Sean has, since it would kind of really be up to Thurman to put butts in seats here. It would be interesting. And also, I think it also depends on where the fight is at. If it's in Brooklyn, I think that's definitely a much better scenario than if it was held out in the desert. But I think this is a fight that definitely to get the maximum, it would have to be held in the Barclays Center. What do you think, Jabron?
Definitely, because they both had fights in the Barclays, and they done built the relationship with the Barclays. And the fans come out and support their fight. So, I mean, that's pretty much like a no-brainer unless somehow, some way, you make some mega card where it'll be like a main event and a co-main event, but the co-main event is just as strong as the main event, you know. So besides that, yeah, definitely the Barclay or Madison Square Garden, but the Barclay, definitely.
Well, Layman, you know, we have to talk about these two champs. I think, it was a treat somewhat to see them back-to-back. That way, people really don't, have to go back in the archives or whatever. They have to look it up. I mean, it's right there, back-to-back. You can almost make the comparisons, in a picture-in-picture. Layman, what did you think about, first of all, Deontay's performance? And do you think that he got a little... Even though he was victorious, he seemed a little over anxious for this fight, because he wanted, he had been off for so long. What did you think about his overall performance, and was there anything that you would have changed?
Well, I had to think about that for a second. First thing I want to say is, no, I wouldn't have changed anything that he did, anything that he said. I feel his pain, man, because here he is, United States World Heavyweight Champion, but yet his own countryman steady talking about AJ. What's his name? Anthony Joshua. So, it's like he got to sit back and he got to be like, wow, man. So now he got this fight. And, I have to tell you, man, I'm surprised because I thought it was going to be a much better fight than that. But Dak, I just lost my train of thought. What was I saying?
We were talking about the performance of Wilder, and you were talking about how you felt this pain about, just touching and talking about, Go ahead.
Yes, because I was trying to go deep with it, man, because it's like I said it on the show before. I said, and it's hard for me to say this, JK, but even though Anthony Joshua is a black man, he's of a lighter complexion, and so he's more acceptable by the rest of the world versus a guy like Deontay Wilder. He's a dark-skinned, tall, Mandingo-looking dude, what I mean? And it's like, I think it's Anthony Joshua has a more friendly, inviting presence to him than, a guy with braids in his hair, the 6'7", dark, dark skin. So, again, that's just my opinion, okay? So, but his performance, he was really expressing what it is that he was feeling. And so I ain't mad at him for missing. I ain't mad at him for everything he did, because I felt that very pain myself getting ready for Galata. So I could really identify with everything he was going through. And that's why if you listen to him even after the interview, after the fight when he was doing the interview in the hallway, you know, he ain't got nothing but love in his heart, because he a true champ. He just want what is his, and he got eyes to see. And our people in this country are not embracing him like they should. And that's just my spit on it.
Jabron, according to Copy Box, Deontay didn't even get hit. It seems like Stavern threw four punches. He didn't land any, but Mike Layman, did you feel Deontay's pain? And I mean, you know, what did you take away from that particular fight?
Yeah, I felt his pain. I mean, leading up to the fight, I did pretty much all my homework, watched a lot of his interviews, watched inside his camp, different things of that sort. So his journey to this point, and then to be in that position where, you know, the guy that failed the drug test is up next to the ring taunting you and all this nonsense after you knocked this guy out. You know, like, why are you even there? But, you know, that's the business. But I definitely felt this pain. And I kind of figured it was going to go not as fast as it did, but I thought Stavern would be out of there within three rounds, because he came in 15 pounds heavier than he was in the previous fight, and he was claiming he was dehydrated, which is bogus. And I knew that wouldn't work in his favor when you already way slower than him, so you're going to put 15 more pounds on. Like, I didn't see that working in his favor. So, you know, on to the next chapter.
Layman's talking about that Stavern being overweight. Between him being overweight and the body language, did you ever get the sense that Stavern was really seriously thinking, you know, that he could win the fight? I mean, you know, so some fights, I mean, you know, you look at the fighter and you know that, you know, I mean, you know, he has that swagger about him. He has that look, you know, that at least he's going to make it a fight. To me, you know, Stavern was more, even though he was talking smack and whatnot, if you look, really looked in his eyes, it was like, you know, he was really doing a sleep train commercial. It was like he knew he didn't stand a chance. Have you ever, you know, like looked in your opponent's eyes, Layman, and seen that look where, you know, you knew that they didn't really want to be in the ring with you?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, as a warrior's first job is to try to find the weakness in his opponent before he dismantle him. So, yeah, absolutely.
Did you see that, Layman, or was, you know, I just read too much into it, you know, being a Deontay Wilder fan?
No, I mean, you know what, man, you were on the money, but really, you know, I have to say, man, the home run of the night went to Jabron, because everything his brother just said was like a professor at, yeah, like Harvard University, you know what I mean? Like the way he just really just put his spit on that, man. When he came in 15 pounds overweight, and like you said, he claimed he was dehydrated, this, that. I mean, man, like I didn't even pick up on all that. I was just going off of his word, you know, his word. His word was, hey, I was dehydrated. I got time to get ready for this fight. I'm going to be ready. All the mistakes I made in the last fight, I'm going to just make up for it. Well, you know, it's funny because thing about Allah, Allah is like paper. It ain't gonna last. You know what I mean? And it's funny because Allah came back and caught up with him, because I gave him the benefit of the doubt when the brother said I was dehydrated. Well, what's your excuse now? You know, it's like, dude, you know, for all this time, I've been thinking like, oh, you had a shot. You was the champ, but you was dehydrated, so you lost your title. But, you know, it's like, wow, man. So what excuse can you give now? Like, you was worse now when now you could have picked up the pieces after we gave you the benefit of the doubt when you said you were dehydrated. So it's like, man, you really look stupid right now. And not just my two cent, man. I mean, he a good brother, and all I'm saying is this. You said you were dehydrated. What excuse do you have now? I feel like he tarnished his career even more because he came into this fight and he got stopped after doing all that talk, all these years talking about I was dehydrated. So that's just my two cents on it.
We also saw on this same card Dominic Brazil had fought Eric Molina for an eliminator for the WBC, which is Deontay holds. Raymond, you've had some very good things to say about Mr. Brazil, but I'm not convinced so much about him or his record, especially when you talk about if his next fight would be against Deontay. I appreciate the business part, and it would be a great payday for Dominic, but I don't see him being able to pull out a victory against Deontay. And I think that even though he's bigger, I think that he would present just as much of a stationary target and a punching bag as Mr. Stavern did. Would you be looking for a Brazil Wilder fight, Layman?
No, I not me personally. No, hold on. Let me go back. As a fan, I would. Yes, I would. I would as a fan. Only because Brazil's a big guy, he's tough, and he's a game fighter, you know. So I, you know, just being a fan, hey, get a kid a chance if he can get a chance, you know what I mean? Like, if he can get in position to fight for the world title, give him a shot. You know, he win, lose, or draw, he's a tough guy. He's gonna come to fight, and that's what I say about that. What you think, Jabbar?
Yeah, as a fan, of course, because they have history, you know, and Deontay's fight before this, where they fought on the same card, there was drama and a little scuffle between both camps and things of that sort. So the build-up would be woo. It would be electrifying. But from a business standpoint, I'll go ahead and accept that call from Eddie Hearn and take that $7 million. That'll be easy money to knock Dylan White out, since that they want to keep putting these speed bumps in the road to get to Joshua. I'll just make that easy work, because that will be easy work for Deontay. Easy work. So I'll take that $7 million.
Yeah, it would be hard to pass it up, you know, $7 million or $7 million. Another fight that possibly has some implications on the WBA featherweight title is Scott Quigg He won his fight, and now he's talking about possibly Santa Cruz or Mars. Jabron, what do you think? Quigg against either one?
I mean, it'd be a good fight. I think they would edge him in those fights, but they would definitely be action-packed fights.
I know you don't follow the little guys that much, Layman, but what do you think here? I mean, any fight with Leo or Abner is bound to be pretty action-packed. But are we kind of getting back to the old days, Layman, where, you know, now we're starting to see, you know, more of international bouts like this World Boxing Series and some other eliminators that we have out here. Do you think that this we're getting back, you know, maybe to that golden age where we had fighters going all over the world and it was entertaining on both sides of the continent? Are we getting back to that, Layman?
Well, you know, I tell you, I'm probably not the best qualified to make that call, but I will say, you know, with the wisdom that I have, I know that things always come back around, you know. The things yesterday always come back. So even the mentality, you know, the spirit, and I can see it happening. I can, you know, especially, you know, with the technology and the you know, you got better rules and you know, I just see boxing going in a great direction where we will be able to cross, you know, these international waters, and it could still be fair for everybody.
Keeping that in mind, Jabron, would you where would you put the where would you place Eddie Hearns in this? I mean, we can't say he's a pioneer because these have happened before, but would you call him maybe a fresh air to boxing now that we're not, you know, like just tuned into, you know, Top Rank and Golden Boy and you know, the ones that we're used to seeing? Do you think that, you know, Eddie Hearn has actually did something to revive fan appreciation for the sport?
I think Eddie Hearn is making these dudes get up off their little high horse and actually promote and work, because this dude is making moves and he is coming. And I'm liking the buzz that he got going on in boxing from all different weight divisions and angles. Eddie Hearn is building relationships. And he's a slick guy, man. He's real slick. I like him, man. I like him a lot. You know, something that the casual fans might not know about Anthony Joshua is that another way to slip away from Mr. Deontay Wilder is that he has one more fight left on his Showtime deal, so he will be a free agent. So he could easily slip over to HBO because Eddie Hearns has that relationship with HBO. That's how Danny Jacobs is fighting this upcoming week on HBO. So keep your eye on that.
Yeah, well, you know, like you said, you know, it's when you talk about relationships in boxing, it's funny how things come back around. Layman, one of the reasons why I said that is because we also have in November, I believe it's November 9th, We have Haseem Rahman Jr. He's going. I'm not sure if this is going to be his debut fight, but he's actually fighting another heavyweight, carrying on the tradition of the father. Raymond, you know, is this a sign? You know that you know we're getting up there now, man. You know, I'm seeing Haseem Rahman Jr. All kinds of juniors here. I recognize the father's name, man. I mean, you know, has time really flown that quickly, man?
Yeah, man. You know, they say time waits for no one, and you know, it's actually good to see the sons of these great fighters in the business. You know, carrying on the tradition of their fathers. You know, I think it's great for the sport, and it's great for the legacy. You know. You get a baseball player or, you know, a cop, and their whole family were cops and baseball players, you know. And so the boxing is the same thing, you know. Boxing, you got to always remember, was always the top sport back in the day, you know, going back to John L. Sullivan, you know what I mean, Jack Johnson. So, you know, it's great to see a legacy continue, you know. You know, well, even if there's like trainers and referees, you know, especially like Jimmy Lennon and a few others out there, it's always good to see that tradition, man. It makes you love the sport even that much more, in my opinion.
Yeah. Your thoughts on that, Jabron? You know, being a fan and a historian of boxing. I mean, you know. Your thoughts on how small the circle really is?
Well, I don't know. I don't got too much to say on that one. You got me stumped on that one.
Just to kind of, you know, when we talk about how things have expanded and talking about technology and whatnot, if you kind of look at the schedule, you know, we have fights not only online, but, you know, we got, what is it? I think it's our next event, November 10th, Showtime is going to be out of Cleveland. Then you got Danny Jacobs. He's going to be fighting, I believe, out of upstate New York, Uniondale. You see BN Sports Espanol. There's FightTV.com. Layman, you know, when you look at all of these new outlets, how do we keep from being oversaturated, you know, and by that, I mean, you know, I'm sure, you know, after you, you know, get to the main event or the co-main event, there's not going to be a lot of people tuned in unless they're hardcore fans or they're fans of the boxers. Do you think that... It's possible for us to be trying, for the sport to be trying to be doing too many things at one time and being too many things to all people instead of, you know, just, you know, keeping on the path that it is, appealing to the true boxing fan. And, you know, occasionally we'll have, you know, that hero that everybody, you know, kinds of rallies around. Your thoughts on you know, technology in the business, good or bad?
Well, first thing I want to say is I don't think that you try to cater in boxing to one specific mindset of a person versus a fight fan that knows a sport versus just a fan that just loves boxing or who just have some money and it's cool to take his boys, or you know, go to the big fights because maybe that's what his parents used to do. You know what I mean? In the tradition of the sport of boxing. So, I don't know, man. I don't know.
Jabron, I mean, you know, I'm thinking, you know, like from, I guess, a family, you know, father son type of thing. Usually, when the family is, you know, gets involved in boxing, you see the whole family, mother, father, sister, brother, you know, the whole family type of atmosphere. Jabron, what is your thoughts? I mean, do we have to go back to the family approach in order for us to maintain the purity of the sport? Do we as we talk about instead of letting these youngsters develop into the professionals that they can be, are we so busy leading them to slaughter before they're really ready? Your thoughts on this? Is technology forcing our young boxers to be in the spotlight before they're ready?
No. I mean, everything has pros and cons. I mean, it's also that technology is getting them more publicity, getting them more fans, getting them more people eyes on them. So, you know, it works both ways.
Layman, knowing, you know, how active you are on social media, what's your thoughts on you know, how former champions such as yourself and you know, Ray Mercer, all the guys that you're associated with, Buster Douglas, you know, some of the guys around here in D.C. And once again, I'm going back to the amateur program. How do we appeal to the younger guys, and I'm not I'm referring this strictly to the inner city and places, you know, like Indianapolis and some of our other cities, inner cities that are really struggling, Chicago and whatnot. Layman, how do we, you know, with all of the technology and everything, how do we attract the fan base back to the amateurs? I mean, you know, going back to family, I mean, I remember, you know, when going to the Golden Gloves was, you know, it was a family affair. You know, you and your little brother, the father, I mean, you know, you all went. It was a night, you know, it was a weekend. You all went out and enjoyed it. You know, you might have even known two or three fighters that were on the card. So, Raymond, what do you think? I mean, Does this also encourage the amateur program by, you know, you have more eyes on the sport right now?
Do we have more eyes on the sport right now? And now, you're speaking of just strictly amateur, or you're speaking of just boxing, period?
I'm speaking of boxing, period. But putting
yeah,
emphasis on the amateurs.
Okay, well, you know, the amateurs, you know, they get the crumbs that fall off of the top echelon of boxing, and wow, I don't know.
You knew it wasn't going to be easy.
All right, we'll rephrase the question because, you know what, my mind went in a whole other direction.
Well, with all the exposure, from, you know, social media and whatnot, all of the free TV and free
right.
internet, do you think that the amateurs, you know, that were discouraging the amateurs because there are so many avenues now for them to be seen, and you know, you have these promoters here that are ready to throw you in the ring after only having, you know, 15 or 20 amateur bouts. There's no more, you know, like grooming 3 or 4 years of going through, you know, the PAL program, or going through a Golden Gloves program, or being in the USA
right.
boxing program. With all of these, you know, YouTube and like I said, all of the different fight medias out there, are we starting to make amateur boxing seem almost irrelevant?
Yeah, I think so. I really do, man, because you got to think about it. There are so many other sports out there that are thriving, and then you've heard so many bad things about boxing. So, we are in a more competitive market than when we were in the 80s and even the 90s. But, you know, now you got MMA and you got, you know, just, you know, everything is top flight. So it's like we got competition. So the whole family tradition of boxing, you know, it's transcended, you know, because now you ain't got to go and watch live circuit. You know what I mean? Boxing has just transcended, and social media has been one of the greatest things. But we don't get to benefit from it, but our youth do. And I just think it takes boxing in a whole nother direction, even the way of thinking, because it, you know, the way of communicating is so affected by it.
Layman, I'm going to take you back in history a little bit here, because I'm sure this is something that you'll remember. But on this day in 1994, George Foreman knocked out Michael Moore in the 10th round to defend his championship. Layman, where were you this day in 1994?
Man, I actually want to tell you, I boxed with Michael Moore to get ready for that fight. But I can't confirm it. I know that I was around, at Wild Card Boxing Gym. Nope, because you know what? That must have been afterwards that he came to Wild Card. Yeah, okay, no, that's right. It was after. So, no, I wasn't in camp. I wasn't in camp with him. But I knew who he was. I was around him. But, and yeah, I did. No, I'm trying to think of the fight. No, it was the Holyfield. He fought Holyfield after Foreman, right? Or before?
Yeah.
It was after. Oh, okay. Okay, yeah, so when he was – okay, so when he had fought Foreman, I didn't know him. No, I didn't know him. So I don't know where I was. I would have been in Los Angeles, that's for sure, probably at 108 and Broadway Boxing Gym. Believe that.
I was just wondering. I thought it was just a point of trivia there. I thought you might have been around the Michael Moore camp or one of them. But, yeah, it was quite a bit. 1994, George Foreman, just the big old man. I think this was even before the grill. DeBron, it was good having you back on the show tonight. But before we chop up these last 30 minutes, I promised Layman that we'd let him go. Layman, I hopefully we'll see you next week, and we'll be able to talk a little bit more about things that are coming up, and maybe a little bit more about some of these amateur programs. Trying to hook up some things with these guys down in Maryland and Kansas and a couple other places. But Layman, why don't you tell us, tell everybody where they can find you on social media, progress you might want to report as far as the fighters for Puerto Rico, or anything that the champions might have in the fire that they would like everybody to know about.
Hey, man. Well, thank you always, JK, for having me on the Pugilist Corner. Thank you, Jabron. You have really blossomed into a true scientist of boxing. I really respect your work. With that said, you know, I am working on a reality show. We are in some pretty good talks with some people that may be interested in picking up our show. Thank you for bringing up the Fighters of Puerto Rico. We are working directly with people that are on the ground over there. We've even been in touch with Mauricio Suleiman, who lives in Puerto Rico. And, you know, we are not in this for profit. It's a non-for-profit. Go to www.fightersforpuertorico.com to donate. It is a write-off, and you know, it's just about trying to do the right thing, because if the shoe was on the other foot, you would want somebody to come help you too, and that's somebody's mother, sister, father, brother, cousin. So yeah, that's what it is. But you know, I'm Relentless Damon Brewster. You can follow me at Instagram, on Instagram, Facebook, or Twitter. LAMONTREWSTER. And thank you again, JK. Thank you, Jabron. And I look forward to hollering with you guys next week, man.
All right, Layman, you have a great night, man. And, you know, you and the family enjoy the rest of the night. And, hey, we thank you as always, man. You have a great night. Well, that was the champ, Jabron. Hey, man, you seems like you're making fans everywhere, man. Pretty soon we're going to have another show, you know, maybe we'll have you with Radio Raheem over in China and Monte Carlo and all them other little places there, man, you know. But, yeah, man, it seems like the audience has nothing but love for you. You've garnered the respect of the champ and all the guests that we've had since you've been on the show, man. So if I haven't said it in public, man, we do appreciate everything you do for the show. And it's a joy, you know, just having you on the show and you know, chopping it up with you twice a week. So if I haven't said it before, thank you very much, man. That being said, what news you got for us, man? There's a lot of things happening up here in New York.
We'll get into a little bit of news in a little while. Save that. But I want to dive into this heavyweight division, and it's some things that's on my mind. Is, you know, with all the fiasco that's going on. One thing I wanted your thoughts on is the finances, and due to Deontay Wilder's record, he's 39-0, and he has that many fights. And then of course you have Anthony Joshua. What, he's at 20 fights now, I think, or 19 fights. So Anthony Joshua, last fight, fighting Takum, received $20 million, you know, guaranteed. We're not talking about the any pay-per-view sales or anything of that sort. Just, you know, flat fee. And Deontay last night received $1.4 million, and he's also a heavyweight champion. I understand the fan base over in the UK, but at the same time, he's still a heavyweight champion, and he's has a lot more fights than Anthony Joshua. And if you really look at their resume, besides Vladimir Klitschko, pretty much their resumes are about the same. I mean, they don't had some common opponents. So what's your thoughts on their pay grade, and why do you think it's such a disparity between the two?
Number one, let's talk about the disparity between the two. And I think that goes directly to the promoter. When you talk about you know, Eddie Hearn, a promotion of his, you know that you're going to have a certain quality of fights. It's not, I mean, very seldom are you going to have any walkovers. He's established himself well as far as having a reputation for putting you know, fighters in there against one another, and I think when you compare the expectations of the European public, not saying that they're more knowledgeable, but they have access to bigger venues and in some cases more knowledgeable fans. And I say that because, you know, when you look at you know, the British Isles, you know, Ireland, England, Scotland, you know, when you just look at those Isles in themselves, they support boxing. You know, and here in America, we don't to a vast extent. Now you have your exceptions, you know, your Floyd Mayweathers, your Manny Pacquiao's, but we don't really have someone that's going to continuously fill up a Jerry Jones Stadium or the MGM. Whereas Joshua and these guys, as soon as Eddie Hearn announces a fight, the next day, more or less, they're sold out. And this goes, once again, I say, to the direct relationship between the promoter and the people. We've burned those bridges with Bob M, with Don King, now seemingly with Oscar, and the public just don't trust the American boxing promoters anymore, and that's the reason why I think you see the biggest discrepancy, and the reason why you don't see, I mean, a guy like Scott Quigley has a following over in Europe, but he doesn't have a following here.
Yeah, but at the same time, the UK don't have options like the United States does. And when I say that, you know, boxing is their sport over there. It's boxing and there's soccer, you know. Whereas here, on the night of a fight, you can go see LeBron James playing against the Knicks at the Garden, or Beyonce performing at MetLife Stadium. You know what I'm saying? Like, there's so many options. You know, you have to take that into consideration, that they don't have those things over there as much as we have here as far as options.
In some ways, I would agree with that, but you know, music is big over in Europe. You know, possibly you know, bigger than it is here, because, you know, a lot of our old acts go over there and still have an audience. Stevie Wonder goes over there every year. The Who goes over there every year.
But the same night as a big mega fight, you're not going to have all those options. Everybody's not going to be performing in the UK, and LeBron James is going to be playing the same night, and then a baseball. Think about it. Think about all the sports we have over here. In one day, you can have college football, Major League Baseball, hockey, NBA, boxing. Like, you can have all these things going on in one day. Like,
I definitely agree with you, but then on the other hand, you know, if you have a concert in Las Vegas one night, then, you know, sometimes, you know, it's hard to bring those people into a boxing venue. And to give you two examples, they have a NASCAR thing in Vegas every year. Now, that NASCAR crowd does not always spend money in a boxing venue. You know what I mean? There's no crossover. And I think, you know, as you said, when you have so many things at one time, you know, I mean, so many things competing for the fans' money, you know, that possibly that makes a difference. But when you speak of the numbers, man, when you're talking about, you know, the difference between $1 million and $7 million, and you're talking about, you know, a country, you know, possibly the size of Texas and California, you know, generating that much money, and we have 50 states over here and can't sell out two fights on two different coasts.
True. That's true.
Yeah. I think, you know, like I said, it comes down to trust. When the fans don't trust boxing, you know, and people can still put that kind of, you know, black mark on the sport as far as drugs and whatnot, I think those are the things that contribute over here. You know, over there, you know, I can't really say, you know, but I just think that it totally has to do with the lack of trust that we have for the managers, for the promoters and the officials, especially, you know, when you look at a couple of the fights that happened recently and a couple of decisions. Not saying that the wrong person, you know, won the fight or anything like that, but just, you know, when you look at some of the scores, I think people seem to think, even though I would agree, I think that people would tend to have more confidence in the World Boxing Association series than they do over, say, a WBC Eliminator or a green or a blue belt.
Well, I mean, the economics over there makes sense. You see Eddie Hearn is dragging Tyson Fury out of retirement to get him prepped to fight Joshua. You know, he's going to throw him in there with a nice little tune-up to shake off the rust and throw him in there with a big mega fight with Joshua.
And that's the thing. See, now, you know, if Eddie Hearn says that he's going to do that, then people have faith that this is what he's going to do. If Bob Arum had made the same statement, would you have the same faith?
Well, I wouldn't say just Eddie Hearn, because Tyson Fury promotes himself. He's very active on social media. He was the first to reveal it, to come out and say that, you know, he's been given license and he's already back training. And he, you know, the video, he was jogging while he was shooting the video, telling about, you know, he's going to lose this weight and get down and get in there. Of course he's going to lose that weight. If Eddie Hearn went to him and be like, look, I can cut you a check for about $12 million, guaranteed, plus pay-per-view upside. Man, please, he getting off the couch.
But see, but that's the thing though. Could he guarantee him $12 million guaranteed, and put the fight in Vegas? No, he couldn't.
No.
You know, that's, you know, that's why I just think I don't know that. It's a very good question that you bring up, and I'm sure that, you know, economically there are definitely more reasons for it than we can think of, you know, just off the top, or at least that I can think of off the top of my head. But to me, you know, it all boils down to the fact that, like I said, I don't think the public trusts American promoters, which to me is really I don't see how you can go that way, considering how much we've cleaned up the sport, considering how much we've gotten doping out, how much you know, we've gotten rid of those more or less bad reputation that we used to have, and it's just, I guess it's just a matter of time before the finances catch up with the technology of the program, and with so many boxers getting caught doping, do you think that might even contribute more, because it seems like that, you know, you find more of that on this side than you do on the other side. Do you think that even though I think we have a superior doping program, do you think that people have lost trust in VADA, and maybe that's the reason why?
No, I mean, the casual fan don't pay attention to that. They just look at the name and the person, and they have they particular fighters that they like. You know, they're not too much concerned about PEDs and all that stuff. They just want to see a good fight. The casual fans, us diehard fans, yeah, that stuff matters to us. If guys being tested and all of that stuff, but the casual fan, no.
Speaking of, let's talk about some of the other things that happened this weekend. Soto Carras got TKO'd, and he's thinking about retirement now. Do you think that was one fight too late?
Yeah, he could have called it quits before, but, you know, heart of a champion, he's a warrior. You know, he always left it in the ring, and my hat goes off to him, man, and I hope he have a good retirement, and hopefully the couple of dollars he did make, he invested it wisely. So I would definitely want him to ride off into the sunset and not come back 6 months later.
Yeah, 6 months, 3 months. You know, I mean, it's. I really think he needs to hang him up and possibly see what goes from there. But we did see Abula. He KO'd Broadhurst in the first round, which was the fight that I was talking about. And he says he wants Sullivan Barrera next. Did you see anything in Bula's arsenal that would think that you would want to match him against Sullivan Barrera? Maybe you know, maybe a couple of fights down the line, but right now, I think he looks a little too green. What do you think?
Yeah, I think he's a little too green for Barrera because Barrera been battle tested. But if they want to throw him in the lions, then hey, I'll be watching when they make the fight. I'll definitely be watching.
Speaking of watching, you spoke about Granados, and we talked about you know, Porter, his hand broke and whatnot, but you know, Granados is one of those high risk, low reward guys. What do you see next for him?
That's all up to him. If he, you know, want to come back and keep fighting the top guys, but I think he could definitely get some fights. He's definitely good work for a person, especially an up and coming person to be battle tested. But at this point, at the level of competition that he's faced, I think he's not gonna just settle for any type of fight, you know, low-level guy. He's trying to go after a title contention or some type of eliminator. So, you know, I still think his stock is high.
Speaking of the other gentleman that lost and looked badly doing it to me, Mr. Stavern, did you see anything that would warrant you still counting him among the top heavyweights?
Top heavyweights? He need to retire. The dude about to be 40. For real, he about to be 40. It's time for him to retire. What else he has left? Nothing. He don't look like he trained that hard. You know, he put on all that weight. Like, that wasn't good. You know, boxing is a full-time job.
Not when you think of being 40, you know, trying to make weight and you know, having a very suspect chin. Not only for Deontay, but, you know, I don't know. I'm torn because, you know, I was disappointed that the Ortiz fight fell through. I thought Ortiz would have been a better matchup, probably, you know, a much more exciting fight. But that, you know, but all that being said, do you see that possibly there being a Dominic Brazil versus Deontay Wilder fight before, you know, you see something with Joshua again? I mean,
not with Eddie Hearn with that $7 million out there. Brazil ain't getting no fight. Would have happened, he'll treat him just like Stavern. He'll pay him step aside money and he'll go cash that Eddie Hearn check.
Well, see you kind of answered the question that we started out with. You know, why does the boxing public trust Eddie Hearns more than they trust the promoters? You know, over here, why is Deontay getting $1 million? You know, and somebody else is getting $7 million step aside money. I mean, you know, it doesn't make sense. But
people know who Dillian White is over there, and you know, they can put about 20,000 to arena, and you know, sell out the fight and put on a good show. So I think they can make the money. Plus with the pay-per-view upside, yeah, they'll definitely make a nice profit over there with that. But if you made that fight here, they wouldn't. No, they wouldn't make that type of money.
No, ain't nobody giving them $7 million over here to step aside.
I ain't even get $7 million. They'll probably give Dominique Brazil about $750,000.
Well, even that, you know, I mean, $750,000 is, I mean, you know, that to not have to fight, you know, is pretty good money too. But you know, hey, this month and especially the beginning of next month, it seems like we're going to have some great action. We got Lomachenko and Rigondeaux in December. We also got Cotto in December. We got Kovalev coming in at the end of the month. So there's going to be a lot of action at the end of the month, and hopefully we'll have some very good guests and whatnot. And Jabron, why don't you tell everybody where they can find you on social media, any news that is coming out of New York here, and tell everybody where they can find you on social media.
Well, before we get out of here, it's some news that I updated a couple of weeks ago about Adonis Stevenson fighting his mandatory in Elder Alvarez in January, which is January 27th. Now it seems that a little birdie said that's scratched and that date still will be used for Adonis Stevens, and his opponent will be possibly Badu Jack. So just keep your eyes open within the next week or two. You should see it breaking news, press release about the fight. But once again, it's not 1,000% confirmed. But if you go to BoxRec, they did take down the Elder Alvarez as Adonis Stevens' opponent. So from my sources, it seems like they're right on point. So that's my thoughts, and I'll leave you with that. And with that being said, keep supporting boxing. I'm Jabron Clemens. You can find me on Facebook. That's JABRANCLEMON. Let them know where they can find you at, JK.
Well, you can find us, as always, on the Pugilist Corner on Facebook. And you can catch me on Twitter at West Coast Steeler Fan or KingsCrib.com. And we thank the champ for coming and visiting with us tonight. Sorry we missed Scully. I know Scully is back on his way back from New York City with the family and whatnot, but hopefully Scully will be back next week, and we'll find some more very interesting subjects to talk about. Don't forget to catch us Tuesday night on the Pugilist Corner, and we look forward to talking to everyone again next week. So have a great show, everyone. See you next week.